So from film and TV and books to get into the great outdoors, it's time to head out to the garden. But it's not an opportunity this week to get our hands dirty. Blueprint's resident botanist and director of the Royal Botanic Gardens Melbourne, Tim Entwistle, is looking at some gardens where creative license is being used to create a space as much centred around illusion as around nature itself. Trompe l'œil quite literally means trick of the eye. It's the artistic practice that's all about the delight of illusion. And Tim is talking to artist and creative gardener Nobby Seymour about just that.
Now, Nobby, you create all kinds of art, and these days a lot of what you do would probably I'd call abstract, but I'm a botanist, remember, but you also create almost the opposite, and these are landscapes that trick us into thinking they're real. Not just any landscape, but these are gardens. We're looking at in front of us here some photographs and images and pictures of, well, they look like gardens. What are they?
Trompe l'œil, which I started painting in about 1984, and usually architects and designers came to me and they said, can you do anything with this space? It's not working within the volume of the building. And quite often I found the solution was through this illusion, this garden scene, and sometimes that was extending the garden into the context of a garden that already existed. The trick was to keep it fairly banal almost, because if you were in a Melbourne suburban home and there was the Pacific Ocean and palm trees down the end of the passage, you tended to realise that you were being had.
But do most people actually want to make the garden look a little bit more exotic than they could perhaps grow there anyway?
Yes, I think so. One particular job that I did over in the United States, the owners had moved to Florida, to Palm Beach, and they were missing their herbaceous borders they had in New Jersey, so I painted them. It was too hot in Florida to grow a herbaceous border, but anyway, thanks to me, they've now got one.
So this is almost, instead of getting a hothouse or instead of moving house, you can actually create a garden that you couldn't normally have there. The pictures are lovely here, and there are some fantastic plants in there too, and you've created not just gardens, but you look off into mountains in some of them too. So that's part of it as well, I guess, is a landscape as much as a garden setting.
Yes, sometimes I kept the landscape very literal, and other times I could be quite fanciful so that there was the possibility to look out into sort of dreamy landscapes with mountains in the distance. Often I frame them by the foliage of Australian trees, usually Australian trees, sometimes European.
Are plants easy to represent, or are they a bit like faces? I had my father was an artist, and he used to say my face was difficult to paint, so he always painted my brother's instead. So are some plants difficult to paint?
Yes, and it was very interesting because the early Australian painters painted the Australian trees through European eyes. I had a problem the other way around. I grew up in red gum country, and when I started painting elm trees, European deciduous trees, for example, I tended to make them look like red gums. So, but I quite agree with you, Tim. Trees do have their own sort of persona and a certain imprimatur about them that give them a certain look.
And your background actually is as an architect. You trained as an architect, and you talk about each plant having its own look and feel, I suppose. Is there a style and an architecture, if you like, to each of the plants as well?
Very much so. We were out in the back garden before, and we were admiring a fig that had sort of self-sown, and I explained how I loved the fig because it was exploring space, and then we looked at a succulent, which it almost was defending itself against the space. So they both expressed these two very different personalities, which I think we both found quite charming.
Now, just talk me through a couple of the pictures we have in front of us now, just if you could describe a few of these landscapes. There's one right in the middle here, which is very classical as well. I mean, you're almost using trees here like columns and making it look like it's a building. Just explain that one to me.
Yes, that was actually commissioned by a well-known nursery way back in the 80s. And the lady who owned the nursery in High Street, she wanted a backdrop for showing all her pot plants and whatever. So I painted this landscape, which had two sort of needle obelisks on the side. There's a tree form, which was espaliated, forming a view through to a somewhat idyllic, romantic landscape, with a little sign which read in Kafkaesque way, I think, saying, "Kindly do not tread on the landscape," because it had this path leading into the landscape. So it's just to deter people from walking into the illusion.
That's beautiful. We have lovely signs in Botanic Garden saying, "Please walk in our grass," in Australia, because overseas you're not allowed to walk on the grass. And there are other pictures here too with some Australian images as well, and birds too. Is there another one here you might just pick out for us?
This is a job I did in Sydney, for example, and we're looking out onto here I've continued the floor. It was actually in a corridor leading to a lift in a private home. And I've carried the floor through into this illusion, this trompe-l'oeil, and you can stand out on this terrace outside, which is underneath the branches of a Tristania conferta or Queensland brush box, which were lining the streets of this particular part of Sydney, and enjoy a really spectacular view of Sydney Harbour without too much building in it.
Yeah, so it's like there is a door painted on there, you can see outside, but of course it's all an illusion. There is a lot of this work going outdoors. A lot of the big cities around the world, you see these pictures on the side of buildings of sort of false windows, and that's a more modern take on it. Because I was about to say, is this something that perhaps is a romantic period that we've now passed?
I think it was a zeitgeist in a way that it swept through the world in the late 70s, 80s, and by the 90s it was perhaps starting to die out. And it ended up being done by a lot of people and not always done terribly well. I think that a certain element of the trompe-l'oeil is that it had to have a visual wit to it, and if you didn't have that visual wit element, the trompe started to fall flat on its face.
What is the survival rate of these, either in private houses or publicly? Because they are, I mean, once you put something on a wall, it is riskier.
Yes, it is risky, and look, a lot of them have gone to God, so to speak, but there is a certain risk involved in painting things directly on walls. But I'm very pleased to say that the State Library have now taken possession of all my photo records and so on, so that'll go into the archives at the State Library, so they will live on in one way or another.
Thanks, Nobby Seymour, for letting me into your garden, both real and imagined. I'm Tim Entwistle for RN.
That's the apparently hard-to-paint Tim Entwistle there. He was talking with artist and gardener Nobby Seymour about the fake outdoors. You're listening to Blueprint for Living on RN and Radio Australia with me, Michael Williams. Still to come, I'm going to get some advice on some slower-burn paths to deliciousness, from bottling olives to slow cooking. But before we get there, it's time to talk architecture.